This is CBS News on the Hour.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The third installment of the 28 Days franchise, titled 28 Years Later, opens in June 2025. Sources say despite the new chapter's $75 million budget, part of the new film was shot on an iPhone 15. This would make 28 Years Later the most expensive film ever to use smartphone technology, at least for cinematic purposes. We've come a long way since movies used to use flip phones. Just a little over a year ago, in late 2023, Norman Lear was being praised by everyone in Hollywood after his death at 101 years old. But Sally Struthers, who played Gloria on All in the Family, says that she was not a huge fan of Lear. During a recent appearance on the Let's Talk About That podcast, the two-time Emmy winner says Lear told her she was only cast because she had blue eyes and a fat face like Carol O'Connor, who played her father, Archie Bunker, on the show. Words hurt, even with two Emmys and a big bank account. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national championship tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College football's championship game is tonight in Atlanta. Ohio State against Notre Dame inside the Atlanta Falcons Mercedes-Benz Dome. It's the first time in 12 years the Fighting Irish have played in the championship. The Buckeyes were there in 2020. Notre Dame, 8.5-point underdogs. Kickoff on ESPN at 6:30. The Wisconsin Badgers say freshman defensive back Xavier Lucas signed a two-year NIL agreement early last December to remain with the Badgers for another 2 more years. Lucas has since moved on to the Miami Hurricanes, has hired lawyers to fight the dispute. NBA, the Bucks beat the 76ers, 123-109. So how did the Bucks go from a 1-6 start to the season to now winning 4 in a row?
For us, you know, at times we were focused, at times we wasn't focused. But overall, we played a good game. It doesn't matter, we won the game. You know, now it's 4 in a row. Thank you, Mr. Dan. It doesn't matter, we won the game.
That's the Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
First time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
It is going to be partly cloudy today, our high right around 6 above, but that wind chill will be pushing minus 15 to minus 25 here for a good chunk of the day today. Tonight, some flurries down to 9 below with a wind chill to minus 30. Tomorrow, sunshine with a high of 3 above. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 2 below zero.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Afraid as promised, a bitterly cold start to our Monday. Welcome in, everybody. It's the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yankee on an inaugural day Monday, Martin Luther King Day Monday. That means no markets as far as agriculture is concerned for the rest of us. No banking, no mail. Well, you get my drift. It also means not much outdoor activity for a lot of folks. However, if you're a Wisconsin farmer, those cows and cattle still need to be taken care of. Our animals are priority. So I'm thinking about you folks as you bundle up to walk out outside today. It's going to be dangerous. Today we'll see no better than 2 above as our daytime high. Should see sunshine, but we'll also feel wind. Wind chill values minus 15 to minus 25. Winds coming out of the west, 10 to 15 miles an hour. If we can muster it, we may see some flurries after about 2 o'clock this afternoon. Tonight, another chance of flurries before midnight. Dangerous cold overnight, minus 12, and then you factor in wind and we're minus 20 to minus 30. Tomorrow, Tuesday, sunshine, but still very, very cold. 1 above, the best we'll see. Factor in the winds out of the west, we'll drop minus 20 to minus 30. Tuesday night, same thing. Dangerous, dangerous overnight lows. And then Wednesday, we start turning the corner. Chance of snow in the forecast on Wednesday. Daytime highs around 23. And Thursday, it improves even just a little bit more. Stu Muck, our ag meteorologist, has all the weather details you're looking for when he joins us live in about 15 minutes. You know, it's not been that long ago since the pandemic changed all of our lives and all of our daily patterns. And that includes consumers and their shopping. You know, there was a lot of stories during the pandemic talking about how the meat processing industry was crippled by not being able to get their laborers, their workers to come to work, and then just the supply chain breakdown overall. Things have improved, but what did we learn during the pandemic? That's what I talked about with Michaela Hoffelmeyer. She is one of the professors that's funded in part through the Dairy Innovation Hub and their grant monies. She's taking a look at our employee-employer relationship that was strained during the pandemic, but is improving ever since. At least Michaela hopes so. I had her explain how she started down this path and what her background is.
Yeah, so I was doing my dissertation research at the time, and as I was sort of gearing up to do sort of a bigger, longer study, the pandemic was happening. You know, there were all these stories that we saw online and on the news about meat processing workers getting sick. And I had mostly worked with farmers in the past, and it just felt like a chance to turn a little bit more to a different area, a different population that we don't talk to maybe as much as we do with farmers. And eventually I picked some small-scale processing plants back in my home state of Iowa, because we know actually quite a bit about sort of the labor conditions, the dynamics in these workplaces in larger plants. So Tyson, JBS, these places have been studied by sociologists, anthropologists, and others who are working in these places, who are talking to industry folks. But it seemed like we made a lot of assumptions about small-scale processing plants, and particularly how workers might benefit from this reinvestment, this reinvigoration for these small scale plants. So that's kind of what drew me to these places. Also, I was in Iowa at the time, and they have what some people call an ag gag law, but it's mostly a way to protect some of these processing plants against like photojournalism, these types of more animal rights activists. But essentially, it makes it illegal to enter processing plants without disclosing who you are or going in under false pretenses. So essentially, I just approached 2 small-scale plants, said, you know, I'm a researcher, I'm a graduate student, I'd like to look at what it means to operate and stay viable in this really competitive industry that we saw sort of people getting squeezed out of for decades and decades and decades. And then we sort of had this crisis moment during the pandemic where, you know, farmers were struggling to get their cattle in, processors, you know, were booked up and for months and months. And then consumers, you know, were seeing higher prices at the grocery store. So that was the background context.
And you actually did get engaged. You were actually on the floor. Were you just talking to people or were you doing something, Michaela?
Yeah, so at the first plant, and I can't disclose the specific location because of confidentiality, but I was at a small scale plant that I call Murphy's Meats. So basically there's 10 employees, a manager and an owner. It's been in the community for a long time, has changed hands a few times. But basically I just went in and I said, look, this is what I'm doing. You can hire me. You can hire me as an intern. I want to work in this place. I want to talk to the other workers, you know, of course, if they want to. It was all voluntary. And then the managers. So at the small scale one, for about 3 months, I was there. Half the time I was working on the deboning line. So when you get a cow in or a pig in, you have sort of three or four workers working to remove most of the meat from the bone. And so I was doing that. I did a little bit of packaging. And then sort of the second half of the time I was there, I was assisting on the kill floor. So they had two workers back there. So I did some of the euthanasia, some of the skinning, some of that processing. So it was both, you know, in that context, I wasn't being paid. I was just an intern sort of position, but it was working alongside folks, partly just to get the hands-on experience and then, you know, really see sort of that day to day. We call it ethnography, the sort of the study of hanging out, and getting a better sense of what's going on. At the slightly larger place I worked at, they had about 50 employees. I call them Iowa Choice Processing. But they wanted me to, be a formal hire so that I was covered under any, you know, worker compensation, worker health and safety stuff. So I did work there as a formal employee. I was paid $15 an hour, and they had sort of two main lines of production, but we sort of shifted over to mostly ham processing. So they didn't have a kill floor there. They essentially got in these big, what they called combo boxes of a portion of a hog, and then we sort of processed that down into smaller boxes that would eventually get made into pepperoni, salami, those types of value-added products at the end, but we were just sort of breaking it down. And that was sort of the main line of production. There was also an international customer that we worked on. So I was mostly stacking boxes, doing some of the cuts on the ham line, but that's was sort of the day-to-day.
It's hands-on. Now, what was the goal? You mentioned you wanted to be immersed a little bit in what meat processing in the small to mid-size looked like post-pandemic. So what did you learn? What were your observations?
Yeah, so I think one of the main takeaways is we have a lot of assumptions about family farms, about small operations. And at the end of the day, you know, these are places that are really beneficial for communities. You know, they're providing jobs. Farmers have more bargaining power and choices on where to take their animals. Consumers have more options for where to buy their meat, how to get their meat. So all of these are really beneficial aspects when we have sort of a food system that isn't concentrated in just a few firms or hands. But from my perspective, it really seemed like we were making assumptions about how workers were benefiting from these places. So most of us know, you know, if you're working at a small family business, there's a lot of pros. You know, you can work closely with a manager. There's maybe some more flexibility. You know, you have maybe more of a personal connection. But there can also be some downfalls. You know, as a worker, you may not be getting sort of the same healthcare access and benefits. And especially in a dangerous job, some of those can be really important. So I think that sort of expectation that smaller is always better is true in many, many cases and for many things. And you know, just as a few case studies, you know, this isn't denying that fact, but it's saying, you know, there's some vacuums in here in terms of, for example, the USDA and Food Safety Inspection Services. They are in these places and they're often really active in these places, but their whole role is largely focused on food safety. So they're, you know, looking over shoulders and making sure workers are checking the temperatures of meat. So we have many of these managers who are having to respond to this really food safety focus. And that's really important. But at the same time, there's almost no support for workers in these places. And, you know, some of the most shocking things, at least in my work, was that many of these workers received almost no training before they were asked to handle, for example, 22 long rifles in killing animals, or even just a basic knife. knife, if workers aren't trained on how to keep those knives sharp, then they experience higher rates of injury, you know, and then turnover is sped up. So really trying to look at this through this worker-oriented lens to say, you know, small-scale processors are under immense pressure, and they often have to pass off some of that sort of instability, insecurity, and pressure off onto the worker. So no one's necessarily benefiting in these contexts. And I think, you know, it's important to say, you know, most managers, most farmers don't wake up in the morning and say, well, how do I undercut my workers? How do I make sure my workers get injured? You know, most people are really trying to do the best that they can in these contexts. So some of that was just trying to figure out, you know, what are managers doing to support workers? You know, where do they feel like they can invest a little bit that benefits workers and maybe helps reduce turnover?
Were they receptive, open-minded, nodded their heads that they acknowledged this was already going on, or did they say, okay, young lady, there's the door?
Yeah, I will say, you know, in the smallest of plants, it was a little more of a contentious workplace. So, even though, you know, these workers and the managers knew one another very well, it was pretty tense. There was some sexual harassment, some, wage theft, basically, where there was some, uncertainty about how overtime was distributed. So it was sort of a contentious place. And I will say in that processing plant, most of the workers were local U.S. citizens, predominantly white. In the larger processing plant, this was a larger Hispanic workforce. But the managers, they had a really different relationship with the workers. So in both cases, you know, I was treated, you know, as a researcher respectfully. They knew why I was there. But I think in trying to, you know, share a little bit back, it's sort of hard in the moment because there's not that many people. And so, you know, I couldn't say, well, hey, I think you're, you know, doing this illegal practice of wage theft. They knew that. But then in the larger plant, Iowa Choice Processing, you know, when I was talking to the manager a little bit about, you know, these workers have really poor quality of knives, and they really are hungry for better training on how to keep these knives sharp. And you know, they knew that, but at the same time, what the manager said was that training is like painting a door on a house that's on fire. So he's well aware of the fact that workers are not getting all the training that they need. That's impacting, you know, how long they can stay on the job. But because of all these other pressures, you know, USDA is standing over their shoulder. Their customers are standing over their shoulder. They're trying to operate in this highly consolidated industry. They just didn't feel like they could have a systematic process to train workers.
Yeah, kind of caught between a rock and a hard spot. That is Michaela Hoffelmeyer. Hopefully you'll see her around through some of our winter conferences. Her research on some of those employee stressors in meat processing facilities specifically, funded in part by grants from the Dairy Innovation Hub. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I've said it before, I'll say it all morning. Always thinking about the farmers and agribusiness folks out there that are trying to get the job done, because everything we touch in agriculture seems to be mechanized, and mechanization does not like temperatures like this. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, they need to be warm. The batteries need to be charged. I messed around with a skid loader battery that I know is getting a little weak. I'm stretching it out, put the trickle charger on it.
Yep.
And you mentioned, yeah, we're running extension cords. Are they safe? Are there any big breaks in that cord? Is that going to light up on us sometime at night?
Yeah.
Oh, we got to think a little ahead.
Yeah. And where is the wind coming from? Can we get some plywood over that hole that we meant to patch? I mean, there's any number of to-dos that have to get done today, especially with the temperatures, dangerous temperatures out there, huh, Stu?
Yep, dangerous temps. I mean, let's just say it. All of Wisconsin under a cold weather advisory till at least midnight tonight. And the extreme cold weather warning, extreme cold warning, kicks in then later tonight, lasts through all the day tomorrow, with the exception of far southeastern Wisconsin, at least at this point. But we talk about very cold air. That cold front dropped through here end of the week. The cold air has just settled right on in. At most, a few stray flurries could pop up here or there with that cold weather. That may happen a little later today or this evening in some parts of Wisconsin. Not going to amount to anything. Cold conditions with wind chills that, yes, are going to be down around that 20, 30, 35 below range later tonight on into the day Tuesday. Very, very cold. Make sure you're bundled up if you're running out. Just running out in the sweatshirt, then spending 5 minutes outside isn't going to work. That's really dangerous. We just have the cold weather, and Alberta Clipper does drop in with a very small snow chance as we head to Wednesday, and that will help to start turning those temperatures up a bit, making them warmer. I'll have forecast details right after this.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe this spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking your seed dealer for Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Join the Midwest Farm Report team along with Wisconsin soybean and corn growers at the 2025 Corn Soy Expo on February 6th and 7th at the Kalahari Resort in the Wisconsin Dells. Learn from industry experts on disease updates, cover crops, DOT standards, weather patterns, and more. Comedian Greg Warren will bring humor to the closing of the event. Connect with fellow farmers and share ideas among the breakout session. And don't miss the popular beer and bowl session. For more information or to make plans to attend, visit cornsoyexpo.org.
Alrighty, Stu, let's talk a little bit more about when we turn the corner. We've already got them convinced it's going to be a miserable Monday. When can we start turning the corner?
Tuesday night, things slowly start to change. Our Compeer Financial Ag Weather Update, including that cold weather advisory till midnight tonight, the extreme cold warning kicking in after that. We expect mostly sunny skies today, maybe a few stray flurries in the west or south late today. Temps will do their best to struggle close to zero, maybe just climbing above in far southern Wisconsin. The west winds 5 to 15, some gusts near 20 and better, keeping wind chills on the way low side. Overnight, partly cloudy skies, still cold. Teens below, could be close to 20 below in far northwest Wisconsin yet tonight. The west winds 5 to 15, adding those wind chills down near 30, even 40 below. Sunny, cold on Tuesday. We finally start pushing a little further closer to zero in the north, maybe one or two above in the south. The west winds about 5 to 10. And late Tuesday night into Wednesday, Pam, some of that light snow may develop. More clouds. Temps, in fact, may rise late Tuesday night for many of us. And we could be up around 20 or so, at least in the upper teens in the far northwest for Wednesday. But strong south winds on Wednesday, Pam, 10 to 20, a little gusty. Still going to feel chilly with a little bit of snow.
Stu Muck, our ag meteorologist, with our Compeer Financial Ag Update.
This is the Mid.
CBS News Brief. It's Inauguration Day in Washington. CBS's Stacy Lynn.
Inauguration Day begins with the service at St. John's Church, followed by tea at the White House. The president-elect will then head to the U.S. Capitol Rotunda to be sworn in at noon.
Mr. Trump's expected to issue a slew of executive orders today on immigration, energy, government hiring. He's also promised to pause the ban on TikTok.
Frankly, we have no choice. We have to save it a lot of jobs. We don't want to give our business to China. We don't want to give our business to other people.
The Israel-Hamas ceasefire is holding after three Israeli hostages were released in exchange for 90 Palestinian prisoners. The former hostages spent the night at a hospital in Tel Aviv. The BBC's Mark Lowen is there.
Their families stayed with them overnight. They've been given private rooms, a private chef as well to cater to whatever they want.
Thousands of displaced Palestinians are returning to bombed-out neighborhoods and homes today. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Hollywood is still mourning the loss of director David Lynch. Tributes have inundated social media the last several days for the Oscar-nominated creative force behind Eraserhead, Blue Velvet, Lost Highway, The Elephant Man, and The Straight Story. Lynch's colleagues are also paying tribute. Sopranos creator David Chase says no one who creates a long-form drama on TV was not influenced by Lynch's iconic Twin Peaks. Lynch was a one-time Wisconsin resident and passed away last Thursday at the age of 78. Speaking of Lynch, actor Kyle MacLachlan says he owes his entire career to David Lynch. The director cast the now 65-year-old actor in Blue Velvet and also made him the lead actor in Twin Peaks. MacLachlan called David Lynch the most authentically alive person he's ever known. That is some serious praise. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national championship tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College football's championship game is tonight in Atlanta. Ohio State against Notre Dame inside the Atlanta Falcons Mercedes-Benz Dome. It's the first time in 12 years the Fighting Irish have played in the championship. The Buckeyes were there in 2020. Notre Dame, 8.5-point underdogs. Kickoff on ESPN at 6:30. The Wisconsin Badgers say freshman defensive back Xavier Lucas signed a 2-year NIL agreement early last December to remain with the Badgers for another 2 more years. Lucas has since moved on to the Miami Hurricanes, has hired lawyers to fight the dispute. NBA, the Bucks beat the 76ers, 123-109. So how did the Bucks go from a 1-6 start to the season to now winning 4 in a row?
For us, you know, at times we were focused, at times we wasn't focused. But overall, we played a good game. It doesn't matter who won the game. You know, now it's 4 in a row. Thank you, Mr. Dan. It doesn't matter who won the game.
That's the Bucks' Giannis Antetokounmpo with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
It is going to be partly cloudy today, our high right around 6 above, but that wind chill will be pushing minus 15 to minus 25 here for a good chunk of the day today. Tonight, some flurries down to 9 below with a wind chill to minus 30. Tomorrow, sunshine with a high of 3 above. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 2 below zero.
Hank. Like, a guy that can make that stuff seem fun and entertaining.
Yeah.
A guy that keeps you listening through some horrible Brewers team.
Again, we're thinking about all you farmers out there on a frigid Monday morning. You still have to take care of chores. You're still responsible for all that livestock. I'm thinking about you. It is a dangerous kind of Monday as far as weather in Wisconsin's concerned. Welcome back, everybody. I'm the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. We are going to be talking about some students and their activities on campus in this weather. You know, if you're involved in the farm and industry short course, how to deal with the weather is one of the elements that you learn about. Stephanie Hoff got a chance to visit with Steve Kelm, who is the coordinator for the Farm and Industry Short Course at UW River Falls. It's growing as far as the class size is concerned, and they're revising some of the curriculum. We're going to bring you the details in just a little bit. So today is the 20th day of January, Martin Luther King Day, Inauguration Monday, of course. What else can I tell you about this day? Well, let's see. On this day back in 1934, Fujifilm is founded, Japanese photography and electronics company. After it was founded, it really became a global player in the field. May not be doing much as far as film for you and I today, but still around. Fujifilm, founded on this day back in 1934. And how about a happy anniversary to former NFL quarterback Tim Tebow and his wife Demi Lee? They are celebrating their fifth wedding anniversary today. And now you know.
Wisconsin's dairy industry remains a vital part of the state's agriculture, built on hard work, innovation, and a strong sense of tradition. A new voice on the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin Board of Directors is helping share fresh ideas and promote the importance of Wisconsin's dairy products. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report, and Allie Straczynski, a dedicated dairy farmer and proud member of the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin Board of Directors, is joining us for this month's Check-In with Dairy Checkoff. Allie brings hands-on farm experience and a passion for showing how Wisconsin's dairy farmers make a difference locally and around the world.
I was lucky enough to get onto the Dairy Farmers Wisconsin Board of Directors this summer. It's been a great experience. As a next-generation dairy farmer who started after Checkoff was already in place, I have taken for granted the impact on production innovation and building the Wisconsin cheese identity over the past 40 years. Checkoff has allowed Wisconsin cheese to be sold nationwide, and it can be found in 99% of grocery stores. So being on the board of directors has allowed me to learn more about these impacts.
And as a dairy farmer, but also being, you know, part of the board, how important are exports for Wisconsin dairy?
Exports are huge. That is the way that we can sell our milk, the way that we can market our product.
And what should Wisconsin dairy farmers know about the Checkoff and what it does and how it works?
I've been lucky to gain a front row seat to these programs that are designed to strengthen relationships with both bulk buyers and individual consumers. These programs help to coordinate things like in-store demonstrations, digital ads, in-store sales material, and both earned and free media via public relations. And this all encourages consumers to look for that proudly Wisconsin label that has helped our state product be known so well.
And how many products carry the Proudly Wisconsin badge? I know when I'm out shopping, that's what I look for. I mean, I'm a cheese fanatic. I guess that's a given when you live in Wisconsin. But when I'm out searching for Wisconsin dairy products, you know, I'm looking for the Proudly Wisconsin badge. But just how many products are there?
Yeah, there's actually more than 5,500 Wisconsin dairy products that now carry that Proudly Wisconsin badge that was developed by Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin.
And it's not just the farmers that are helping to promote Wisconsin dairy. There's also some restaurant chains that are making a difference, right?
Yeah, there's been some new product development and joint promotions with restaurant chains such as Culver's and Domino's, and that's opening an incredible opportunity for Wisconsin dairy products.
We've started 2025 now, so as we kick off this new year, everybody's got their goals, what they want to do, but what should Wisconsin dairy farmers be excited about?
I think the fact that there is an increase in milk consumption and a growing demand in the export space that we talked about earlier, all for Wisconsin dairy products, is something that every Wisconsin dairy farmer can be excited about.
And I know it's too soon probably to be thinking about, but for me, a big highlight of my year is always June Dairy Month because it's an excuse to eat cheese or ice cream every single day. Nobody can yell at me. So I'm sure there's other things like that to be excited about, right?
Yeah, definitely. We're already starting to plan our June Dairy Month activities, and you can find all that information on the WisconsinDairy.org as well as Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin social media page. So definitely check all that out.
As a farmer, but also a board member, what is your favorite part about the Wisconsin dairy industry and just what DFW does for farmers?
I think just the pride that it can give me in being a dairy farmer. I'm lucky enough to do this, and so then to have it be a prestigious job and not just one of those dirty jobs that you have to do. It's a really neat thing.
What would you say is your favorite type of cheese or your favorite dairy product? If you had to eat it every single day, what would you choose or what would you suggest others choose?
Ooh, right now I am really liking a good Merlot Bellavitano. I think it's got lots of options. So I like to just let it warm up a little bit and eat it plain, maybe with a side of sausage and crackers.
And so obviously things change every single day in our industry. What is something that maybe you've learned the most about just how impactful Wisconsin dairy is for our state, you know, from the time you were a kid growing up with your dad to now being the one running the farm?
I think the quality of milk products is something that is really changing year after year. Just everything from cleanliness of the farm to somatic cell count to the quality that you're training your employees to have is something that is really growing every year.
What does it mean to you to know that you are one of the 99% of Wisconsin dairy farms that are still family-owned?
Yeah, that's a pretty cool thing to be part of a family-owned organization and business. And I think what people don't realize is that I don't personally know any farmers that are not part of a family-owned farm. So it's really more common than it's not.
That's Allie Straczynski, a dedicated dairy farmer and member of the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin Board of Directors, joining us for this month's Check-In with Dairy Checkoff. Wisconsin's dairy farmers, like Allie, continue to lead the way, producing high-quality products that make a difference in our communities and beyond. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
When a company only does business in Wisconsin, that's Wisconsin Strong. Rural Mutual provides all lines of insurance, including commercial, farm, home, and auto. And your premiums stay right here to keep Wisconsin strong. Local agents, local underwriters, local claims adjusters.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Rising energy costs impacting your farm's profits?
Focus on Energy is here to help with increased incentives for energy-efficient upgrades in 2025. Save money and energy for years to come.
Take the first step toward lowering utility bills. Call 800-762-7077 or visit focusonenergy.com/agribusiness today.
That's focusonenergy.com/agribusiness. Focus on Energy, proudly supporting Wisconsin farmers since 2001.
If you're going to be watching the inauguration parade today, keep your eyes out for the garbage truck that the president was riding on up in Green Bay. The company that made that garbage truck, Loadmaster, has their vice president taking the garbage truck out to Washington, D.C. for the inauguration. And he says they will also have two that will be on display during the inaugural ball if you're looking for a Wisconsin connection to what's going to be happening out east today. As I mentioned, markets are closed for not just Inauguration Monday, but also Martin Luther King Monday. On Friday, we had a pretty good day as far as overall numbers were concerned. We saw the March corn finish almost a dime stronger at 484 and a quarter. December new crop was up three at 456. March soybeans gained 15 cents and closed the week at 1034. November beans were up seven at 1027 and three quarters. March wheat was a penny and a quarter higher on Friday, closed at 538 and three quarters. The July new crop up a penny at 560 and a half. No change on barrel or block cheese on Friday. The AA butter that actually dropped a half a cent down to 253. Fluid milk contracts. Class 3 milk that goes into cheese. February was up 12 at 2018. March up 6 at 1994 hundredweight. That closed on Friday.
sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Career in Wisconsin agriculture. They're in school right now. I'm talking about the Farm and Industry Short Course. In Wisconsin, the Farm and Industry Short Course started back in January of 1886. Basically, it was a 12-week program that allowed folks that were involved in agriculture or wanted to be involved in agriculture to spend a shorter period of time on campus and get a lot of information in a short period of time. The original short course structure had about 60 different lectures that focused on everything from animal husbandry to agriculture chemistry to botany. And that tradition continues today on the UW River Falls campus, where Steve Kelm is the coordinator of the Farm and Industry Short Course this year, running through March 14th. And he said class size is up and they're more optimistic than ever going forward. He had a chance to catch up with our own Stephanie Hoff and share the update.
So we have 10 students enrolled this fall. You know, it's a little more than last year. And so we've kind of altered some of our advertising and how we market the program a little bit this fall. And so hopefully we'll bring a few more people in.
You know, typically in the past, these have been students out of high school that are looking to get into the farm business. Are you still seeing those types of students, or are you attracting a different profile of a student?
It's generally the same profile as it had been in the past. We're pretty much in that kind of category of the, recent high school graduates, individuals that are looking to become involved in a farming operation or in some way, shape, or form involved in the dairy industry.
Dairy has been the focus of this new and improved Farm and Industry Short Course at UW River Falls. Remind us why dairy was the focus.
Well, dairy was the focus. We wanted to start with an area that we have a strength at our institution, where we have really some strong expertise, and we had some flexibility, for example, in faculty schedules. And also, we just saw it as probably the place where we can best serve the state of Wisconsin and the ag industry. The ag industry involves many, many facets, but we decided we couldn't really cover the entire waterfront, at least at the very beginning. And so it made sense to start with kind of a primary focus first, and that's why we chose dairy.
As I alluded to earlier, this is the second year that UW-River Falls has hosted this short course program. Can you tell me what maybe you learned in the pilot year that you made adjustments for this next round of students?
Oh, I think we just learned, you know, what kind of topics that we want to focus on. We certainly wish to maximize kind of the hands-on perspective. We recognize kind of at the beginning that a lot of work on farm would be ideal, and we've kept that pretty strongly in place. We have certainly been in kind of adjusting schedules too, just to make sure that certain things fit better into student schedules, and we've also opened up, you know, some additional avenues for extracurricular activities. They were always open, but I don't think the students were necessarily as aware of them. And so, for example, one of the students is going to a nutrition conference here in January. That's the first time a short course student participated in that.
Speaking of extracurricular activities, the Farm and Industry Short Course, the reason this is so unique is that you're getting that campus and college life experience, but it's curated toward the student. Give us a sense of what student life looks like for a Farm and Industry Short Course student.
So they stay in the dorms, in the residence life, and for the most part, they're grouped together. So they participate fully in residence life activities. Their class schedule is basically Monday through Friday. So it was a Monday through Friday schedule. Students have been really quite active this fall with participating in dairy club activities, whether that's going on tours, whether that's going to activities that the dairy club has been involved in. Dairy club does some social activities such as intramural sports, and so we had a bunch of short course students that were participating in broom ball and stuff like that, and so they're really getting a chance to get to know a lot of people on campus and really kind of expand the network of people that they know. It's not quite as small a world, you know, as perhaps when they started.
Is there anything else quite like this, or is Fisk pretty unique to Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's pretty unique. You know, there are other, you know, two-year programs elsewhere, you know, similar to what we would have at the technical college system. There really isn't, to my knowledge, other places where there's a residential opportunity for students to get involved with, but also in a very short-term and kind of focused approach to things related to running a dairy operation.
As you alluded to, these students, they are going back to the farm to run successful businesses. After the pilot program, give me a sense of the different avenues that these students took. What are they doing now with that Fisk certificate?
Well, I'm just thinking through the individuals that finished the program, the first year of the program last year. One is farming on his own. He and his father, farmed together in a number of different capacities, but he has his own cows on a second location. I've got three individuals that are working either as farm assistants, herd managers. It really depends on what we're looking at in terms of, you know, the size of the operation. And we've got one student that decided that he wanted to do the four-year program, and so he did Fisk last year, and he's enrolled this year in the bachelor program.
So several opportunities available after completing the Farm and Industry Short Course. Stephen, I'll remind people that, let's see, applications for the 2025-2026 school year, those will be out in the spring.
Oh, they're open now.
They're
they
open
just need
now.
To go to, yep. They can go to our website, Fisk at UWIRF.edu, and they can see some information about that process.
Great news from Steve Kelm, coordinator of the Farm and Industry Short Course, happening now at UW River Falls. And as he said, they're looking for the next round of students today. You can find more at the uwrf.edu website.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
The outgoing Secretary of Agriculture reflects on his time in office under two different presidents. Today on Farm to Fork.
Hey there, it's Mike Rowe, and if you're out there getting dirty, do me a favor and remember to call or click 811 before you dig. And when I say dig, I refer to any activity requiring boring, tilling, drilling, probing, reaming, plowing, drudging, or even scoping. Anything that causes you to roll up your sleeves a little and dig in requires you to first connect with 811 so that you can avoid all those buried pipes, wires, and cables underground. To sum up, call or click 811 before you dig and visit safeexcavator.com for more information.
Fresh air and sunshine are abundant on most farms and ranches. Farmers need to take care working in the sun, though. Excess exposure can lead to heat stroke and dehydration in the short term and potential skin cancer long term. Protect yourself. Wear sunscreen, loose clothing, and a wide brim hat. Farm safety and health is everyone's business. This reminder is brought to you by Farm to Fork through the generous support of listeners like you across the country. Learn how you can help at NorthShoreProductions.com. Tom Vilsack was the Secretary of Agriculture during both the Obama administration and the Biden presidency. During the Obama era, Vilsack says much was done to improve the nutrition program in the country. He says that work continued the past 4 years as well.
We increased and improved the school meal rule by focusing on added sugars, making it healthier. We looked at the SNAP program and said we need to recalculate it based on what's happening in the world today. That resulted in a significant increase in SNAP benefits. We looked at the WIC program and said, you know, it's great, but it could be better, it could be modern. We looked at the opportunity for a meaningful summer feeding program by providing families a free and reduced lunch, children additional financial assistance, so in those 3 months between when school ends and when school starts, kids will continue to get a good meal, and we know from research that that works.
Vilsack remains optimistic about the future of family farming.
With some of the new opportunities that are out there, if we're entrepreneurial, if we're thoughtful about this, we can generate enough income from different sources. We can make a go of it. Now you can have that opportunity to be on this farm and inherit the farm, and your kids can see the benefits of living here, and we'll be able to watch you and your kids grow up. Now, to me, that conversation is the one we want.
That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
You're listening to WRJN and W260 CV Racine, W251 BU Kenosha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez.